All right, you're listening to KTWH 99.5 FM, Two Harbors Community Radio, and I'm Katya Gordon, and I'm with you here with a weekly interview with Greg Ruberg, our CEO from Lakeview Clinic and Hospital. Hello, Greg, are you there?
Yes, good morning, I'm here.
Good morning. You're loud and clear, and thank you once again for coming on the air to share weekly updates with our listeners. So Greg's been kind of an active week with COVID. Do you want to interpret the numbers for us a little bit?
Yes, we've had a lot of activity around COVID and positive confirmed cases and what those impacts are on healthcare and schools and community. Last night we added 6 more cases, which was a pretty large jump. We've been averaging just under 3. It's been about 2.7 per day through the early part of this week. So we're now at 139 total. The other thing I would mention is, as of yesterday, our 14-day case rate was 28.38. And that's that calculation that gets done by public health every 2 weeks. And again, track, and the school follows that formula as well.
Okay. So I know one immediate consequence that's happening is the high school is going to all distance for 2 weeks. Clearly, I'm guessing that's a move that makes sense to you. Do you want to explain some rationale around that, or maybe it's too obvious, we don't need to explain it?
Yeah, I would just say, I think the one thing, we've been contingency planning for this in the school because a lot of our employees are parents of kids that are both in the elementary school and in the high school. And, this, I would say the change on starting on Monday has probably less impact on us as a healthcare organization. Because, 7th through 12th grade, most of those kids, or at least the majority, may be able to stay home or make other arrangements. We are very concerned about if this moves to the elementary school. That hits us pretty hard overnight with parents of young kids that now, if both parents are working, they can't be at work. And, we're seeing increased numbers in the hospital. ER urgent care clinic numbers are up. And basically, the volume is up all over across Lakeview. And it's really hard for us to staff those areas when you pull parents out with kids that are home or people that are on quarantine or people that are sick. And so, again, we watch that one really close. This will have an impact on us, no question, but not probably as severe as the elementary school.
Right. We are all an interconnected web, and especially, well, I guess everywhere, but you kind of notice it in a small city where the parent is also the healthcare worker, is also the sister of the coach, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. I mean, we just have so many. We all are part of this community. Do you have any other, I haven't heard of any other changes happening in our community because of this right now, but obviously that's something that could happen also. Do you have any advice for general citizens, anything different than what we've already said?
Well, the other thing I think the community impact that we've seen is, and this is maybe somewhat related to the school situation, but I've been informed that there's been some infant daycares that have shut down due to either exposure or people being sick, and that has an impact on us. That's outside of the school itself, but we have a department now where we're having people, they'll come in and work 5:30 until 8 to get as much work as they can get done, then they go home to relieve their husband, who then goes to work as well, but they've got an infant at home. And so I think we're trying to be really flexible, really creative to make sure that we can meet our needs of a business, of a hospital and clinic. And so I think, again, I just would remind people that decisions that are being made in the community and impact from COVID does have a direct impact on, direct and indirect impact on schools and healthcare and ambulance service and all of that. And I think sometimes I've heard people say, well, young kids, they don't really get that severely sick. They get a cold and they get over it. But there's a cascade that happens when that person's sick and exposes their family and friends and others. And we're also seeing from the restaurant industry, more and more restaurants and bars are being closed because there's more people with COVID in them. And again, that has the same indirect impact on us through families and relatives and friends and sporting events and those kind of things.
Yeah. Yep, well, nothing we haven't heard before, but it's always helpful to hear it again. And it seems like this is actually the second wave, correct, that of COVID, and that was kind of what was predicted, was this second wave was going to hit us in the fall and winter?
Yeah, I think there's some debate on that. So I think a lot of experts are saying this is still the first wave, especially in our region here. I think in some parts of the country, I think you could make a stronger argument that this is the second wave or second peak or second surge or whatever you want to call it.
Okay.
Here I go back to when we prepared back in March for this surge that was coming. what we thought in the end of March and April, then it got pushed out to June, and then it got pushed out to August. Some of the models back then, somebody just reminded me, that the more, I think, reliable models were predicting our peak or our, I guess, mini surge, if you'll call it that, in October. And we've seen a lot of activity in the last 2 weeks of cases increasing. And you start seeing six a day, and you start seeing it in groups and in different settings. I think that's what we were looking at, what we knew was coming.
Mm-hmm.
We delayed it, I think, by doing a lot of good work and making good decisions. But I think people are fatigued. I think there's a lot of anxiety, fatigue. And I've heard people just say, I'm giving up on this. I'm going to do what I want, and nobody can tell me what to do. And, you know, there'll be a price to pay for that. There's always consequence. And we will do everything we possibly can here to keep a hospital and clinic staffed and keep our workforce at work and supporting our community.
Hmm. Yes, and yeah. Thank you for saying all that. It just seems like that it is a story that's just going to go on and on, and there's no easy answer. And so as one of the spokespeople for the reality that we just keep facing it, this can't be an easy job, but it does seem like it's happening essentially the way it was maybe going to happen. And that doesn't really mean we know where and when it's going to peak. We also don't, isn't it true that we know less about how it's being transmitted? I mean, for a while it was very isolated. It was congregate care. It was huge gatherings. And now it's more just community. People don't know quite where they're getting, even when they're careful.
Yeah, there's really three points I would make around that. So the first one is I agree that the majority of transmission now is community-based. And so we're not seeing, there's a couple clusters or pockets in different organizations around our county, but it's, you know, people out in public social settings may or may not be following precautions that are kind of transmitting this and increasing our numbers. So I am very confident, though, that if, you know, like in the workplace here, I feel very confident being here and our staff, if they're mask with proper eye protection on, hand washing, keeping distance, that we can really prevent that spread inside of the organization. And our employees have been phenomenal about following that, so that's great. The second thing I would comment on is, in my head, and I don't want to be pessimistic, but in my head, I think about running a marathon. And so I think about, you know, back in March when this first started, that was the start of the marathon. And my personal opinion is right now we're maybe at mile 4 or 5, maybe, of a 26-mile run. And so I think it's important to think is that we're in the early stages of this. And I think sometimes we lose sight of that, thinking that we were going to be in a much better or different place. And, you know, I think it's going to be tough. We're going to have some challenges over the winter. And I think we have some control on that. But, again, the decisions that have already been made by people, I think, you know, that will have an impact. So.
Mm.
So that's the other one. And I think the third piece I would share is, you know, I'm not an expert on this, but I think about when people say, well, this is easy. If we just did this, it would be fine. Or if we just didn't do this, it'd be fine. And that's just, I don't think, accurate. A pandemic like this is complex, it's difficult, and there is not an easy answer. And so you can simply say, shut the economy down and we'll fix it. That's just not true. That won't happen. We'll ruin businesses and families, and people will lose houses and all of that. I mean, there's a balance there. On the flip side of that, you can't say, well, it's a free-for-all, let's go for herd immunity and everything will be fine, because that's not the right approach either. So there is very difficult decisions that don't have all good outcomes, will have consequences, and we have to sort through that and do what, learn as we go and make good decisions and stand firm when we should. And so, but that's much more difficult. I think it's easy to say, well, if we all did this, it'd be fine. Well, that's not going to happen. It's probably not going to work. So,
yeah. Easy answer would be so dang nice, and it's just not there for us. But let's, Greg, let's talk a little bit about testing. That is one thing where we can do something, and it sounds like the testing for uninsured is becoming more available. Can you tell us about that?
Yeah, maybe clear up some confusion that I've heard about recently in the community is, there was a question asked about what if I don't have insurance and I can't afford a COVID test, then I'm not going to get one. And we don't charge, if someone's uninsured, there's a process in place both on our clinic side and our hospital side where that individual can have a COVID test and they won't be billed for that cost of the test. We never want reimbursement or payment for a test to impact the benefit of, impact the benefit of a test from a public health standpoint. So We have a very clear process where we code those differently. There's COVID relief funds that the government have provided to us as healthcare providers that we can bill that for those that are uninsured. Insurance companies will pay for a COVID test if you have insurance. And, you know, of course,
yes,
that is fine. But if anybody thinks that they can't get a COVID test because they don't have insurance and don't have money to pay for it, that is not correct.
Great. Well, thank you for clearing that myth up. And it sounds like the bottom line is if you need a test, you should go get a test. And there's no reason not to do that.
Right. And you still have to meet the criteria, though. I mean, you still have to meet the testing criteria. You know, there's been some talk in the news about if you just wake up one day and decide I want a COVID test just because, you know, then we can't bill that to these funds because we test based on, you know, clinical guidelines and all of that, which
right,
we talked about.
Right. And people in Two Harbors, if they have the means to get to Duluth, there is the free testing at the clinic, which you can get without symptoms. Or all you need to do is be a Minnesota resident. So the availability of testing is definitely ramping up. Months ago, Greg, we mentioned, or you were talking about, you know, what was the goal for testing in Minnesota? What would really enable us to sort of manage this well? Are we anywhere near that goal, or where do we stand at that?
I would say no, we're not anywhere near. And I can give you one local example. We still have two brand new analyzers in a box in our lab that we cannot get testing supplies for. They're all being allocated out through the state, through systems, and those are for rapid tests. And so they would play an important role in, I think, healthcare workers and potentially school employees and other essential workers, where we could test and turn a result, an accurate result, around in 45 minutes to an hour. They sit unopened in a box because we can't get the supplies. We do have adequate supplies, though, of send-out tests, and we keep doing those all day, every day, and that's that 3 to 4 day wait, which is, you know, better than it has been, but not perfect. We also keep a testing kind of an allotment for long-term care should a breakout happen in a congregate care facility. We've got those supplies allocated for that specifically because that's a high-risk group. So we've got a lot of work to do on the testing. And so I think it's just something we keep working toward, but I think even more important is to follow in the guidelines to prevent the spread so we don't have to test people who are symptomatic and through all that from a resource standpoint.
Yeah, great. Well, thank you so much, Greg. That was a lot of information in a short time, and we will check in with you again next week.